Now, Douglas's reputation for missing deadlines with every book got worse and worse during his career. Some put it down to writer's block, some had other ideas. Here are fellow writers Michael Bywater and Terry Jones with their thoughts on the problem.
He never had ideas block. It was actually the business of writing it down. And I think perhaps the one key to this is he started off in radio. He was a radio scriptwriter. It's collaborative. You go to work and there are lots of people around to chat to. And then suddenly this guy finds he's a novelist and what do novelists do? They shut themselves in a little room. There cannot have been a man on the planet less suited to being shut on his own in a little room than Douglas.
Douglas used to say that he was doing absolutely the wrong job. He wanted to be a performer. He wanted to be out there performing and being amongst people and doing things, and instead of which, fate had cast him as a writer, and there he was sitting alone in a room having to write and wishing he wasn't. So it was a great cross to bear for him, I think.
How very true. Douglas had left Cambridge determined to be a successful writer-performer like his idols, the Monty Python team, but instead he became a full-time writer. Whenever the opportunity to perform presented itself, therefore, Douglas leapt at the chance. Whether it was to appear on chat shows, speak at conferences, or play his beloved guitar, he needed no persuading. In this, the first of three examples of Douglas the performer, Professor Richard Dawkins invited him to appear as a surprise guest at one of his lectures. A beaming Douglas quickly obliged.
I was invited to give the Royal Institution Christmas lectures for children a few years ago, and in the third of the five lectures, I wanted to make the point about how humans had traditionally used animals and plants, exploited them, as though they were placed in the world for our benefit. And I had various passages from medieval writers making this clear. And then I wanted to use a passage of Douglas Adams from The Restaurant at the End of the Universe, which beautifully made the point.
A large dairy animal approached Zaphod Beeblebrox's table, a meaty bovine quadruped with watery eyes, small horns, and an ingratiating smile on its lips. "Good evening," it lowed and sat back heavily on its haunches. "I am the main dish of the day. May I interest you in parts of my body?" Its gaze was met by looks of startled bewilderment by Arthur and naked hunger from Zaphod Beeblebrox. "Something off the shoulder, perhaps," suggested the animal, "braised in a white wine sauce." "Your shoulder," said Arthur in a horrified whisper. "But naturally my shoulder, sir," mooed the animal contentedly. "Nobody else's is mine to offer." Zaphod leapt to his feet and started prodding and feeling the animal's shoulder appreciatively. "Or the rump is very good," murmured the animal. "I've been exercising it and eating plenty of grain, so there's a lot of good meat there."
"You mean this animal actually wants us to eat it?" exclaimed Arthur. "That's absolutely horrible. It's the most revolting thing I've ever heard."
"What's the problem, Earthman?" said Zaphod.
I just don't want to eat an animal that's standing there inviting me to," said Arthur. "It's heartless."
"Better than eating an animal that doesn't want to be eaten," said Zaphod.
"But that's not the point," protested Arthur.
Then he thought about it for a moment.
"All right," he said, "maybe it is the point. I don't care. I don't want to think about it now. I'll just have a green salad."
"May I urge you to consider my liver?" asked the animal. "It must be very rich and tender by now. I've been force-feeding myself for months."
"A green salad," said Arthur firmly.
The animal looked at him disapprovingly.
"Are you going to tell me," snapped Arthur, "that I shouldn't have a green salad?"
"Well," said the animal, "I know many vegetables that are very clear on that point, which is why it was eventually decided to cut through the whole tangled problem and breed an animal that actually wanted to be eaten and was capable of saying so clearly and unambiguously. And here I am."
"Glass of water, please," said Arthur. "Look, are we hungry or not?" snapped Zaphod. "We'll just have four steaks, please. Very, very rare and quickly."
The animal staggered to its feet. "A very wise choice, sir, if I may say so. Very good," it said with a mellow gurgle. "I'll just nip off and shoot myself." He turned and gave a friendly wink to Arthur. "Don't worry, sir," he said. "I'll be very humane."
During The Last Chance to See, radio series, the expedition to see the Komodo dragons hit a slight technical problem. In a Radio 5 interview in October 92, Douglas confessed that although he actually went down into the gully where the dragons were feeding on a dead goat, and it was the most repulsive and extraordinary experience he'd ever been through, he was standing there almost vomiting, trying to describe it, but something went wrong with the tape. So weeks and weeks later, he had to go into a studio in Broadcasting House and relive it in front of a microphone. He claimed proudly, "I just imagined it and acted it, and it ended up on Pick of the Week."
Now we're going down into the gully where the dragons lie in wait to be fed every day. Oh, there's a pig over there. It's got the sense to stay away from this particular scene, which is actually quite unpleasant, as there are mutilated remains of a goat hanging from this blue nylon rope down among the dragons who've just been ripping its insides out. We've just been told that it's the mating season, which means they're less interested in eating, but we haven't seen them be more interested in anything else.
I think this is probably one of the most revolting things I've ever seen. There's a dragon about 2 feet in front of me, a very big one, and I should probably be very nervous at this point, except I think I feel more sick than anything else. The dragon is clearly not particularly interested in a very large piece of goat, sort of green intestines hanging from the dragon's jaws, and it's sort of covered with saliva and there's blood all over the place.
Worthy of a Sony Award, at least. Douglas and his guitar were inseparable, and when John Dunn invited him onto his radio show in October 94, our plucky performer arrived in the studio quicker than you could say Slarty Bartfast. Unfortunately, no recording of this exists in the BBC archives, but once again, we have managed to track down an off-air recording of that rare moment.
OK, sir, is this your debut on radio?
I think so, yes.
Right.
Actually, I may have to take my watch off. I've never actually played anything on the radio before, I mean, let alone live, so this is going to be terribly difficult and embarrassing for me, and I'm probably going to make all sorts of mistakes.
It's going to be terribly wonderful.
But I've tried to, therefore, play something very, very simple, which is a song, well, it's a sort of song that I wrote about 20-odd years ago for a Footlights thing. So it's a talking blues. I was walking down the street today, or maybe it was yesterday. It may, in fact, have been last week. Yes, it probably was last week. I was walking down the street when who on earth should I chance to meet? Yes, who on earth did I meet that day? Which was yesterday, or the day before yesterday? Well, it wasn't very long ago, and one doesn't really need to know precisely when it all occurred, but it might have been on February the 3rd. On Feb the 3rd, I was on the street, well, not all of me, just my feet. I was walking along at any rate, but I'm still not right about the date. Yes, now I remember the time I'm in. It was yesterday at 2:15. No, 3:15, 2 weeks ago. Well, I really would quite like to know, so next time I can get on to the interesting bit.
Very nice. Douglas Adams making his debut on radio as a...